Paperman meets such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery.
The Media Project gives you a half hour of commentary and analysis, some insight into what's going on in American newsrooms from the perspective of some veteran journalists. I'm Rex Smith from The Upstate American, formerly editor of the Times Union. And I'm here with two of my colleagues from those years, Judy Patrick and Barbara Lombardo. Judy Patrick, formerly editor of the Daily Gazette of Schenectady and vice president of the New York Press Association. What, Judy, is on your mind today?
You know, there have been a number of stories in the last week or so about artificial intelligence, and each one of them has made me hate the concept even more and more. I see nothing but trouble ahead. I know I'm supposed to be more progressive than this, but this is an issue we need to wrap our arms around.
Okay, we can talk about AI and why that has an impact on media and news consumption, which it really most surely does. Barbara Lombardo, formerly executive editor of the Saratogian and the Record of Troy, and now teaching at UAlbany. What's on your mind this
week? My blood is boiling over the media outlets that are giving Trump cover for his illegal plans to bring the military into Chicago and other cities. Parker Malloy's done a great piece on that, and we need to talk about that.
Woohoo! All right. Blood boiling. This always makes for good radio, ladies and gentlemen. All right, we'll talk about that. I'll tell you what interests me today, and that is just the craziness that happened last week when there was somehow a convergence of events that led people to say, maybe the president is dead. You know, there were the legitimate journalistic reports about questions raised about his health, you know, the makeup covering up his hand bruising and so on. And then he supposedly didn't appear, and suddenly there was all of this stuff on social media about maybe the president is really sick. And for once, I found myself agreeing with J.D. Vance. The vice president posted on X, if the media you consumed told you that Donald Trump was on his deathbed because he didn't do a press conference for 3 days, imagine what else they're lying to you about. You know, he's right, because the media that told you that Donald Trump was dead was not legitimate news media. You were being told that by social media, not mainstream outlets. And social media is full of lies. And so the vice president actually had it. And he was trying, of course, to make you distrust the media in general. But I would say that if you thought over a few days that maybe Donald Trump was dead or was sick or there was something really bad going on that you weren't aware of, I would say it's because your media diet is imbalanced and you really ought to get a little bit more nutritious.
Yeah, but how about also not being able to trust what comes out of the White House?
There you have a good point. Talk to us about that. What are you talking about?
So whether something is happening or not happening, or whether they are spewing lies or falsehoods or misstatements or disinformation, you know, it used to be that if it came from government, you would still be skeptical, but you would want to have some ability to kind of believe that this is coming from an authoritative source. But if something was wrong with the president and he didn't want it revealed yet, they would be covering that up.
You know, I have to admit to a high sugar media diet because I saw this stuff a lot. And crazy where it went. You know, Melania Trump was spotted at Walter Reed and I saw a lot of it. And what I would do and what I would advise anyone to do is I would go to mainstream media and say, does the New York Times have anything about this? Does the Washington Post have anything about this? And they didn't, which was, at first glance, I would say, man, they are not on the ball on this story. And then I realized, oh, there's nothing to this story because there was way too much speculation. There's a little bit of truth in what they're saying, but then there's a lot of speculation. You also see it with Bill Clinton. You see it with any politicians often. You just speculation and conspiracy theories. And again, what you've got to do is go to regular, reliable, credible news sources and see what they're saying. And in fact, even do a search engine search and include a regular mainstream news media source.
Yeah, and I think the mainstream media has to be very careful about not turning around a story telling the public that the social media stuff that's going around is not true, because then it gives it credibility, it spreads the word. And, you know, you'd be doing that all day and night.
Yeah, we used to have that problem in our business is, do you report rumors? You
know, right.
Discount them.
Yeah, do you deny, beyond a story, denying a rumor? And we tried not to do that.
Sometimes it got to be so big, there would be so much that was out there that you would have to publish something to elucidate, to clarify. But you would really try to avoid that.
Yeah, indeed.
And this kind of thoughtful decision-making is really what was characteristic of the mainstream media, which we all represented.
I see you use past tense.
I know, because may we rest in peace. There still are, of course, reputable news sources. Mainstream media still exists. Let's hear it for the fact that the newspapers that we edited all still publish, albeit without as much impact as they used to have. But they are still the reputable news sources for our communities. And nationally, there are still reputable news sources that you've got to turn to rather than hearing this crazy stuff. Over Labor Day weekend, there was this viral video that had a news reporter cadence doubts about his true state of health. And, you know, you get more than 1.5 million people viewing this, and people start to think this may be true. But in fact, the video said all official commitments have been canceled. Not true.
But as Barbara says, the White House has not been entirely forthcoming during Trump administrations. If you remember, I think he went in for a colonoscopy in his first term, and that the speculation was rampant about that when I think he was just embarrassed to say he had a colonoscopy, perhaps. And we get the bruising on the hand, and obviously something's going on with him, but we get these health reports that, you know, he's the healthiest president that ever lived. So, of course, we're going to be a little skeptical. But we do have to go with the facts, too.
And he doesn't embarrass easily, I don't think. Besides him, you know, whether he's dead or not in those kind of reports, when they're reporting on, where's the media when they're reporting on his so-called press conferences and lauding a president for being available to the media when really he is just spewing nonsense, babbling incoherently, regurgitating lies?
It is important, I think, in that regard, for us to remember that not so long ago, there was a lot of criticism of the media for not reporting enough about Joe Biden's mental health. And we need to not just regularize and accept the mental health failings of Donald Trump, which seem to be quite apparent these days.
Yes, and don't you think, or maybe I'm not looking at all the right places, it is being sane-washed.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that 3-hour cabinet meeting where the first question went to some reporter from a pro-Trump media organization and essentially was, you were mugged, weren't you? Isn't crime in Washington, D.C. horrible? And this person said, indeed it is.
Yeah,
and
it
was that a real question from a real journalist? Theoretically so, in this new world we're living in.
Well, and these questions about real questions from real journalists are unfortunately endemic because of the distortion of the facts that is practiced by Fox News and its ilk, those smaller and even more extreme outlets. You know, Fox News has just been thrilled about the federal takeover of Washington, D.C., seeming to suggest that it was really necessary, notwithstanding the fact that crime is not, in fact, rampant in Washington, D.C. Last week, Fox News talked about Chicago. In fact, an analysis by Decoding Fox News, which tracks Fox News, found that the word Chicago appeared 132 times in Fox News transcripts last week because he was saying, well, I'm going to send troops to Chicago next. But in fact, Chicago didn't even make the list of the top 25 most dangerous cities in the United States over the past couple of years. So it's not, in fact, the most dangerous city. But you have distortion of the news by even news sources that border on legitimate. I guess I would say that's true of Fox News because they have some real journalists who work there.
Right. Fox News has never had to pay gazillions of dollars in a settlement for knowingly lying.
She said sarcastically. Yes, it is kind of outrageous. But just last week we were saying on this show, well, there is a reporter in the White House, and I'm sorry, I'm losing her name right now, who's a legitimate reporter who covers
Jackie
Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Is she still there this week, I hope?
You know, it's one of the things the media has to be careful of when it comes to covering crime, because what the Trump administration will will do is if they see a big banner headline that proclaims that there's crime in one city or another, or even one instance of crime, they will take that and run with it and use it to justify their policy agendas, which sometimes does not align with the facts. You see this with anecdotal coverage of, you know, one carjacking, or even if a network takes a hard look at crime in a specific city. I don't know if they realize that they are moving the Trump administration agenda forward when they do that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Can I segue into the ABC coverage of that?
Well, yeah. There you go.
Which columnist Parker Malloy aptly calls journalistic malpractice. Okay, the headline on ABC News was 58 shot over Labor Day weekend in Chicago as governor rejects Trump threat to send National Guard. A total flip around of what the news ought to be. And then, you know, the news is that the Trump administration is determined to illegally send troops into an American city, period. And yes, there's crime, but that is not the issue. The issue is president breaks federal law, deploys military action against American citizens.
So by setting it out the way ABC News did, by setting up this supposed crime wave, despite the fact that there actually have been fewer shootings so far this year than any year since the mid-1960s in Chicago. So by setting it up the way ABC News did, they justified, really, the reporting.
Yeah, so maybe the president has a point.
Mm-hmm.
But that is not the question. If there is crime in Chicago and no one is denying that there's crime, and no one is denying that even if statistically there's a lot less crime, there's too many murders.
Of course.
But that means how do we go about addressing it? And the answer is not sending in the federal troops.
Right. That is a sensational headline. And by sensational, I do not mean great. It is out of context. And my only hope is that maybe it was produced on a weekend when you didn't have the A-team on the desk at ABC News.
Well, it's still there and they didn't retract it. And it's a terrible lead. And then it gets repeated. I'm very upset about it because if the media, the mainstream media, can't figure out how to report the news, we are in deep trouble and getting in deeper.
You know, I wish we had today a television journalist on this program with us because we would be able to put this person on the spot about that great old axiom, if it bleeds, it leads, which we've used pejoratively about television news for so many decades, actually. But that seems to still be the case because for television, you really do have to grab people's attention far more emphatically than we ever did in a text-based medium, newspapers. And I wonder if this isn't in part simply a failing of the medium itself, of the fact that in presenting TV news, it's called a show for a reason. Shows have to get people's attention. And I wonder if that's part of the problem, if it's just endemic to the medium.
Yeah, we found that a little bit when we went to websites and we realized we had to be a little bit of a show. You know, we had to have good entertainment coverage to capture our readers' attention quickly and to hold it. But in the media in general, their coverage of crime, we really have to seriously think about what we do, how we do it. And I mean, a lot of the crime in the big cities are cases of domestic violence. I mean, we leave people with the impression that it's the Wild West in some of these cities. When we have people being beaten up in their home, it's not like stranger on stranger attacks. And so to put that context into our coverage is an important way for us to, again, to deal with these problems, which are very real, and address them appropriately, not with paramilitary forces on the streets.
It is hard, granted, to get people to pay attention to the more sober news. The federal judge who had ruled that Trump's deployment of troops to Los Angeles violated the Posse Comitatus Act. The fact that nationally homicides fell 70% for the first half of 2025 across 30 cities, and Chicago actually was outpacing that national trend, notwithstanding that the president is sending troops into the cities. But it is admittedly hard to talk about the Posse Comitatus Act when and federal court rulings when people would rather pay attention to, it's the Wild West out there, which is what Fox and Friends said.
Well, I remember I had a journalism professor in the old last century back at Ohio State who said that news is what people need to know, ought to know, and want to know. So sometimes they may not even know that they need to know it, and you have to find a way to tell it to them.
Very good. By the way, we need to move on to a topic that I think is pretty interesting in the context of real news versus fake news. Judy, you wanted to talk about this. The president is actually citing fake news. Let me clear this up a little
bit. So complicated. You know, you could be, part of the problem is you can't really believe anything that comes out of his mouth. But here's the situation. This really happened. A contractor at the White House threw a bag of garbage out the window.
Okay.
And there was a video of it. You know, people are always watching the White House. Anyway, it went viral. Like, what's, you know, is Melania leaving or, you know, what's going on? Is somebody trying to escape? And that went viral. And when the president was asked about it, he went through a whole riff about that was AI and that those windows don't open up and they're so heavy and they're bulletproof. And so if you listen to him, you would believe, oh, that's AI generated. And that is going to be his approach. I don't know whether he was just misinformed, whether or not he didn't want to admit that something was being thrown out of the window. I suspect that he just didn't know that it happened. And this was his default. Oh, it must be AI because things don't get thrown out of the White House window. So AI is going to be the new go-to thing to blame when you meet reality that you don't like.
But it really did. It really did happen. Picture of a real thing.
And he actually said, quote, if something happens that's really bad, he said to reporters, maybe I'll just have to blame AI. So he's going to do it, folks. And in fact, he has his own social media feeds routinely use AI-generated and false content, videos showing, you know, the heads of Biden and Obama onto something doing bad stuff. It's not at all unusual. So he is using it, using fake information to generate attention to his feeds and to get people confused about what's real and what's not, and hoping to take advantage of that.
And when I point this out on social media, that this is AI generated, this is not real, oftentimes the response I get from people who think that these are great is, well, yeah, maybe it's AI, but the point is correct. It's like, well, no, the point is not correct. And so much of the internet in the last 6 months has become AI, especially videos. You know, you see videos of Princess Diana hugging, you know, a grown-up Prince Harry. It's, you know, and you're thinking, no, that can't be true. And there's no disclaimer. So that brings up the issue for me is in terms of what do we as the media need to do when we use AI, which I discourage people from doing, even though I know that there are some in the industry that are starting to use it more and more. And what ethical policies do we need to have in place as we proceed down this, you know, treacherous path of artificial intelligence?
It is something for us to be aware of. And the people, it's really a caveat emptor, really the buyer. I should actually look at my Latin a little bit so that it would be reader as opposed to buyer beware. But people have to be a little bit better trained. I guess it's why we long ago should have started doing media training for young people, right?
Yeah, but it's such a difficult thing to do. And there are organizations like Snopes or The Intercept, is it? There's groups that are trying to check into allegations or look at rumors that are on social media and report whether it's
NewsGuard, for example.
Yes.
Rates.
Mm-hmm. But oh my gosh, the effort that gets put into doing those things, it's in reality, it's impossible to be able to keep on top of these things. How are we supposed to do that? Be careful, look out. Well, you said earlier, Judy, about is it in mainstream media somewhere? You know, maybe that's one of the clues for doing that.
You know, as the number of reporters in local newsrooms diminishes, people are hoping that maybe AI can be the resource that will allow us to continue to cover things without real people. I am arguing that we need real people there to bring the human touch. I think AI is stenography, and often it's bad stenography. You know, maybe it can give me some examples of better headlines or better cut lines or captions, as we call them. Or maybe it can help me with data analysis. But we really need to be careful with this going
forward. We need to really be skeptical of it. Our small group of regional papers had a terrible experience with this in the last couple of weeks where they had a correction that was an oh my gosh, jaw-dropping disaster where they talked about how they used AI and the resulting story. I haven't talked to the people, so I'm a little, I don't want to throw them under the bus too hard and fast, but a made-up story basically with made-up quotes and made-up information provided by AI
was published. Yeah.
So they've learned their lesson from that, but boy, oh boy.
But you understand some of the pressures as staff is diminished. Vermont Public, for example, which handles radio and television in Vermont, just laid off 15 positions and shifted 2 full-time jobs to part-time as a result of losing $2 million in federal funding, which represented about 10% of their total revenue. So Vermont Public is one of at least 10 media, public media organizations, public radio and TV, that already have announced layoffs tied to the rescission of Corporation for Public Broadcasting. So I'm hoping that these outlets won't be turning to AI to generate content. I can't imagine any public media outlet would do that. But
we hope not.
To be successful, you have to have good content. I think mediocre content is not going to win you eyeballs. It's not going to win you subscribers. It's not going to win you credibility in the community. Wonderful writing will do that. Wonderful photography. I mean, can AI do investigative reporting? I think not, or not do it well, at least. I haven't seen that. I understand that it can be an aid to a working reporter and do some of these, you know, the menial tasks that, you know, do take time, and we could spend our time doing other things. But wow, I do not want to see them generating content.
Right. And now the public and members of the media, when they are, say, searching for broader information and you're Googling, and the AI stuff is what comes up first. You have to dig harder to actually find the sources for the information to see if they're credible sources. In my class and in my newsrooms, probably did the same thing. You're telling your staffers, if you're looking for website information, like which websites can you go to believe? You need to make sure that you have a credible website. And now, is the health department's website credible anymore?
Yeah, we still love those .gov sites.
Yeah, right. A very good question. And so no wonder there is such a general decline of trust in the institutions of society. The trust gap has grown, especially for younger people. You know, the Pew came out with a new study about the median age of news audiences, and they surveyed U.S. adults on 30 major national news sites, from the New York Times to CBS News and so on, found out that 19% of adults under age 30, that is age 18 to 30, 19% don't regularly get news from any of the sites. And only 4% of people 65 and older are that. So the fact is, say that they don't go to those national sites. So the national sites increasingly are only for older people. Actually, the age is a little bit younger than I expected, but the median age, for example, for Fox News audience is 55. The median age for the New York Times audience is 43. For NPR, it's 48. So it is interesting that older people are those who are getting the news, and the young people, like your students, Barbara, are those who are turning away from national news in any case.
Bottom line for a politician is that the older people are the ones more likely to vote. And so when you look at those kind of figures, you can understand why Fox News, Breitbart, those kinds of news, how they can be so powerful, even though I think Donald Trump did tap into some younger voters the last time around. It'd be interesting to see a comparison from 10 years ago, but I can only imagine there's been a significant decline in the percentage of people that go to the mainstream news sites.
Finally this week, I think we need to say a word about the relentless violence against the press in Gaza. A couple of weeks ago, Israel struck a hospital in Gaza and killed a camera operator. And a few minutes later, 9 minutes later, they struck the same site, which is a terrorist tactic to attack a site when they know that journalists and rescue workers will be there. They killed 4 more journalists. So this is once again showing us how hard it is to do straightforward journalism in a war zone. And I think it needs to be said that this intentional targeting of journalists who are trying to do their job is unacceptable. And we need to make that point clearly if we are to have a civilized world. That's all that we have time for this week. Media at WAMC.org is how you can interact with us, and we welcome your point of view. I'm Rex Smith, here with Judy Patrick and Barbara Lombardo, and we are grateful to our producer, Dave Costina. We thank you for joining us and hope you'll come back again next week for The Media Project.
Read all about it. It's a mess meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ding-a-ling, ding-a-ling, ling-a-ling, ling. Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Judy Patrick, Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette, and Barbara Lombardo, adjunct professor at the University at Albany and former editor of the Saratogian. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
Ting-a-ling-a-ling, city desk. Hold the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling, ling-a-ling, ling. Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.